final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Clubatron. Our 5-year mission, to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new shows and new video games, to boldly go where no woman with a fro has gone before.
Welcome to this episode of Over 40 and Unapologetically Nerdy. I'm your host, Felicia Baxter. This past week has been really tricky with the launch of the rover. Beautiful nebulas on display at NASA's website. Great ships being published on ships of Star Trek. I'll also be talking about the Borg and other Star Trek trivia. And thank you for joining me.
3, 2, 1, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0,
My podcast has become definitely a passion project. As I investigate content to include in this particular part of the podcast, my Over 40 and Unapologetically Nerdy, I get to nerd out on NASA news. And last week was just a wealth of content. I'm also given the opportunity to look out and look up our historical contributions to space exploration and the space program. That brings me up to something I am going to be looking or watching probably somewhere today in this my podcast as I after I record it. I have an appointment at 3:00, but it's only 11:30, so go figure. But getting back to the whole section of this particular part of the podcast, I honestly love the ability or my access to content. As long as I have a signal, I can look up stuff to what interests me. I'm going to have to get better at making an effort to basically download the pictures at the same and with the verbal content, because going back and having to research all of the videos and all of the photos that are available on NASA.gov, because it is public domain, it can be kind of treacherous. They do have a Google-like search function, which made it easier, but it's just like time wasted. And this is time that I could be creating not only this particular part of the podcast, but doing updates and my goal to redo my blog website, etc. And I hope I do a fair job of describing the space photos of the day. NASA does have an image of the day gallery that you can actually navigate to check it out. But they also have how all of the content or all of the visual content is organized in subsections. These are taken from different JPL, like the JPL labs and different universities. But this particular nebula, NGC 2237, is a cosmic cloud of gas and dust, and it also looks like a beautiful and perfect long-stem rose. And they posted this or reposted this just in time for Valentine's Day, but I did something different in my celebration of Valentine's Day. It's located at the edge of a large molecular cloud in the Monoceros constellation, which is about 5,000 light years away. The petals of the rose are actually what they call a stellar nursery. The symmetric shape is sculpted by winds and radiation from the central cluster of hotter young clouds. So this is a hot cloud galaxy. But anyways, this particular cluster on the edge is actually a few million years old, while it's near the cluster that's a few million years old, but the Rosette Nebula is about 50 light years, which is wider, and with this central one being only about 50 light years in diameter, still multiple, a really long way away from us. This credit and copyright is held by Adam Block and Tim Puckett of the Selim Observatory. And they blessed us with a beautiful visual picture of the beauty that surrounds us in space. I also have an image of the Coalsack Nebula, or Caldwell 99. It's actually what is considered a dark nebula. This is apropos because I have, there was a Star Trek Voyager episode where she takes these underachievers to inspect a dark nebula, and this is exactly what it is. Fraught with Hollywood and Star Trek tension, they get accosted by new life form, a really weird dark matter life form that almost caused them to basically be killed, but they all survive to, you know, go back to work another day to get back to the Alpha Quadrant. But this particular one is about as far away as the other one. It's composed of a dense cloud of interstellar dust that completely blocks out visible wavelengths of light from objects behind it. The object at the center of the image, you can kind of see it kind of in a ghostly or in a shadowy kind of depiction, is a protoplanetary nebula. The protoplanetary nebula phase is the late phase of the life of a star in which it has ejected a shell of hydrogen gas and is quickly heating up. This stage only lasts for a few thousand years before the protoplanetary nebula central star reaches about 17,000 degrees Fahrenheit, extremely hot. At this point, the star is producing enough energy to make its surrounding shell of gas glow, becoming what is known as a planetary nebula. But this is a few thousand years before that, I believe. And last but not least, Hubble, the gift that keeps on giving. This representation of WR23 and interstellar clouds in the carina, it is a massive and tumultuous star, which they have dubbed the Wolf-Rayet star, where there are ruffled half-circular filaments, as well as beautiful puffs of shapes that look like waves, but are composed of super hot gases. This is, the center of it is a 35 light year cavity on the upper right. And if you look at it close enough, you can see a face and profile. It looks and resembles Gabriel Mistral, a famous Chilean poet who I didn't find out who she was until I started looking this up. This particular nebula is about 8,000 light years away, and it's a complex neighborhood of numerous clouds of gas and dust rich with imagination inspiring shapes. And the gases are made up of ionized sulfur, hydrogen, and oxygen atoms. And it gives us these red, green, and blue hues from the popular Hubble palette. This particular spacecraft or telescope has captured a wide range of beautiful, beautiful interstellar colors that it has been arranged on what we call now has a specific range of brilliancy, and it's been organized into a collective called the Hubble Palette, which has inspired a whole genre of niche painters using and trying to recreate this type of palette when they do an artist's rendition of what some of the planetary objects that Hubble has been sending us back to Earth. I think it's actually absolutely brilliant. And it's a wonderful blessing to be treated to the wonders of the stars.
Roger, roll, Atlantis. Houston now controlling the flight of Atlantis. The space shuttle spreads its wings one final time for the start of a sentimental journey into history.
Yes, that was liftoff as far as one of the last shuttle missions that took off several years ago before NASA basically shelved that particular program. And then the next stage of commercial space flight was generated either not too long after or simultaneously through the SpaceX program and some other endeavors. But the science behind it still prevails. There's been so many contributions to astrophysics and astronomy through Hubble and through just JPL and a lot of the other engineering suites that discovery and experimentation and contributions of science have gone forth. This week, was a positive, not just for content, but also just for positivity that getting closer to a manned mission to Mars. That's what the whole Artemis program is about. But the spacecraft rover, the Perseverance spacecraft rover, successfully landed on the Red Giant and began transmitting data and information, of course, video back to Earth. And I'm not going to load down my blog, this particular blog post, with a more photo dynamic galleries. Again, NASA has done an amazing job with that, and they actually have a Flickr account. And if I can figure out how to upload those photos or that Flickr feed to the blog post, you can actually either get on Flickr yourself and look it up, or because it's under Perseverance, or you could just navigate to my blog to look at the excitement of the scientists. And I believe they're in California, and then they're no longer at Houston. Through the JPL lab, et cetera, and how excited that they get, and high-fiving, and basically when President Biden gave the lead scientist a call to congratulate him on the successful mission. And I don't mean to be a Debbie Downer, but I was just compelled to take a closer look at the racial mix of the racial as well as the gender mix of the scientists. It struck me that the lead scientist, old white male, the announcer and one of the lead engineers was a brown woman of Asian descent, I believe, but they didn't see a lot of us's. I wanted to figure out where we were. There's an astronaut on the International Space Center, Glover, and I know there have been, since Mae Jemison, other male and female scientists. During my internship in 1992, I met a guy from Mississippi State and from Norfolk State, nerds just like I am. Where are they in the grand mix of getting placement on these amazing missions, and where are they in the engineering and the aerospace engineering of it all? Why don't they get these? Where are we as far as many more of us as to be able to engage and become these team leads on such missions? Where are we? And what efforts are made to reach out to us to make sure that we go through the entrance into this elite group of scientists as we make our way to Mars and beyond? Don't tell me that we don't have the drive and that we're not busting our butts and to get through these high-functioning programs, and we don't have the skill set to be able to manage these types of teams, because I know we're there. I've met them all. Not everybody's like me and doing this as a passion project. There are highly trained, extremely smart individuals that of my race, I'm African American, that need to also be contributing to and to be leading these teams. And what is NASA doing to improve the racial mix, and to ensure that we get the same opportunities, or at least somehow catch up to be able to be on this track, to be able to lead a team like this? Just saying. And that's all I wanted. I don't want to take away anything about what this means for the space program in the United States, but how is it going to be? What is going to be the makeup of us as we actually continue to explore beyond even our galaxy? How is that going to look? With a little bit of a Luke and Laura song remix, because you can actually hear that. What this tells me is someone like me should not have access to video recording or audio recording because I will go crazy. Give me an MP3, give me a way to mix it, and I definitely will mix it up. And that was actually really fun. Again, giving credit to Mr. Jerry Goldsmith for blessing us with that particular remix of Star Trek Voyager. Available on Amazon Music in three different forms: the classic, the pop remix, and the synthesizer version, which I think is hysterical. And how I actually roll day to day, you know, and also how I roll on this podcast is things that really truly interest me as far as NASA, astrophysics. I don't understand the math, so I probably won't comment on that. I just like the beauty that is shared with us from a visual standpoint, how it's actually represented online. But anyways, Star Trek is one of those series and all of its spinoffs that gives, it's just such a wealth of content that you can actually rearrange it and celebrate it in your own way. And that's why I'm glad I actually started this particular podcast, looking at or re-looking at different spinoffs, also other platforms completely dedicated to showcasing different aspects of the Star Trek universe. And then there's my podcast. But in particular, what I'm really happy to or excited to always represent is an Instagram stream that is truly just dedicated to space nerds like myself. In this section of Star Trek Corner, I did showcase three such posts by the ships of Star Trek. The first one being Impok Nor. This is a Cardassian outpost that is the twin of DS9. The artist is by JetFreak7. You can actually pull it up on DeviantArt.com. And it's absolutely amazing. And as well as the final approach of Voyager coming back to Earth. This is by the deviant artist David Metletsitz. I think I've actually featured his art from this stream on a previous episode of Over 40 and Unapologetically Nerdy. And then I have another post, which I'm always very intrigued by the cyber kinetic species, the Borg. And it's kind of crazy because you can see the Defiant in the with escorting Voyager back to Earth. Also, Defiant is the little ship that could on Deep Space Nine. I also watched First Contact, and of course, the Defiant actually helps to protect the Enterprise from the Borg in it, and it cracks me up that you can actually see a silhouette of what I believe is the Defiant getting ready to screw up this particular Borg cube. This is by deviant artist Tara, and they discussed it this past week on the shiptalkingpod.com/STO, and I think you will absolutely enjoy it. And it also, it is a prelude to my discussion about the Borg and the problem with the Borg and the Federation and humankind and how we overstep our bounds, but I'll get to that in just a minute. What I've also added to this particular podcast, and you can actually answer these trivia questions in my blog post, dalesangelsinc.blog/2206. This is actually kind of fun because all of these questions come from Andrew Rucker's book, Star Trek Voyager. The first question is, what station was Voyager last at before entering the Delta Quadrant? Who is the captain of the USS Voyager? Who is the first officer of Voyager? What is Voyager's approximate crew complement? By the time Neelix leaves the ship in the seventh season, which of his organs are not originally his? And I'll actually announce the answers to the questions in next for the podcast for the next time. And I'm also just interested in how many people actually read the notes and how many people will actually take the time to actually answer.
They assimilated me into their collective. I have their cybernetic devices implanted throughout my body. I was linked to the hive mind. Every trace of individuality erased. I was one of them. So you can imagine, my dear, I have a somewhat unique perspective on the Borg, and I know how to fight them. Now, if you will excuse me, I have work to do.
I am such an idiot. It's so simple. The Borg hurt you, and now you're going to hurt them back.
In my century, we don't succumb to revenge. We have a more evolved sensibility.
Bullshit! I saw the look on your face when you shot those Borg on the holodeck. You were almost enjoying it.
How dare you?
Oh, come on, Captain. You're not the first man to get a thrill from murdering someone.
I see it all the time.
Get out!
Or what? You'll kill me? Like you killed Ensign Lynch?
There was no way to save him.
You didn't even try. Where was your involved sensibility then?
I don't have time for this.
Oh, hey. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt your little quest. Captain Ahab has to go hunt his whale.
What?
You do have books in the 24th century.
This is not about revenge.
Liar!
This is about saving the future of humanity!
General, blow up the damn ship!
No! No!
You broke your little ships. See you around, Ahab.
So I have the opportunity, and I'm absolutely blessed that I am allowed to create my podcast using some of the state-of-the-art equipment and turning my single MacBook Air into a recording, a sound, basically a sound studio. I get to create words and essays about, again, what I like to listen to and read and etc. And since this is Star Trek Corner, that previous clip, audio clip, is actually from I really like this movie, Star Trek First Contact. This is when they are engaging the Borg. They follow them back to First Contact when Zefram Cochrane goes to warp and attracts attracts the attention of the Vulcans, and then they establish the Federation, which is kind of tricky because this evidently there was a Third World War where all of the governments were in shambles, and still technology and science was going to was still making great strides. It would lead eventually to the establishment of the Federation. And then with warp travel and then going further out beyond further exploration. However, because of Q's nonsense, humans attract the attention of the Borg, because with the whole Borg issue is assimilation and strive to perfection, which means the perfection of cyberkinetics, cyber dynamics on the biological, and then basically technology performing every function of the existence of the being. And this is where it goes to the left. What is the problem with the Borg? But let me back before I say that. The issue is Jean-Luc Picard and them are not going to let them do that.
there's a complex history with mankind and technology. Species intersect at opportune times. Everyone does not have the quest or the push or the drive to just explore and learn as much as they can and to help protect each other. There are species like the Borg that have taken it to the ultimate level. Then there are omniscient species like the Q that are always trying to antagonize humankind because they cannot understand why they want to know more and are they prepared to protect themselves from species like the Borg. But if they were so omniscient, why wouldn't they just wipe them out? I don't think they are particularly gods, and that's not what they do. And I don't think they are allowed to do that, the collective, the Q continuum, that is. But it would be helpful if they would use their powers for good instead of just harassing, a power of arrogance and will. This is between Q and humankind. The whole issue with the Borg and how they interact goes back to that too early and untimely contact with Jean-Luc Picard with Q when they had the Battle of the Wills. It comes to a head with the Borg War. There's certain things I find problematic. The Borg Queen, and she basically, it's like the Borg doesn't like to lose its best drone, but there was always some type of sexual attraction or tension that they continue to play up between the Borg Queen and Locutus, who is the assimilated Picard. It is like they are the battle between technology and humankind and not seeking that balance all is been trivialized to some type of weird sexual tension. And it's why was she so attracted to this one old white dude is what my thing was. And it's just, he was just one representation of Starfleet maybe, and how they were focused on assimilating that everyone, not just Picard, but all humans, and probably to conquer the Alpha Quadrant. Their technology, and they were just interested in technology and any type of materials to help them continue to strengthen and reproduce as Borg. They had the individuality did not matter to them. And that was the connotation. If they could assimilate him, they could get the secrets of the Alpha Quadrant and then conquer. Like a swarm, like a hive. I don't think they meant this to be, but you have to look at the people that actually created the storylines, because they were all white men. This whole idea of white supremacy even being infiltrating into the Star Trek verse, I see it over and over again with Star Trek Nemesis, how dark that was, and it was connotation. The dark side of the Romulan moon, the characters on that side were dark, all aliens, and it just exacerbates xenophobia and the Zionist and imperialistic conquering that the Borg does. And it's not lost on me that the inside of the ships are just so dark, and dark is bad, etc., etc. Do I think that it has to be so tree huggery as some of the storylines in Discovery? Not really, but I'm annoyed that always dark, and it's like the Klingons, and the Cardassians, everything, the connotations of heat and swampiness and darkness is mean to be evil, and how can colorism and the supremacy that we experience on our U.S. citizens that actually created this, how it can actually be propagated. There is some serious problematic racist undertones that I think they need to be addressed. No, I don't think they need to erase all of these and redo all of the Star Trek episodes, but they just need to become aware of it and make sure they can actually change that dark and evil representation does not mean black or dark. You could actually be the light of the world and have the light of the world behind you and still be completely evil. The whole exploration and advancements in technology is up the what we're looking at even today, because when I actually started writing this piece last week, we had just landed the rover craft on Mars. And I don't think it's you can't be xenophobic and you can't be so arrogant to think that we're the only intelligent species in the galaxy or beyond. That would be not logical. I mean, because if we know what an M-class planet is, why wouldn't life be similar and representative with some modifications elsewhere? Why would an omniscient God only stop with Earth? That doesn't make any sense to me. And we're talking about over a millions of years into humankind is only a wink of an eye for an omniscient being, but I digress. I think the intersection and the importance of not going to the extreme that the Romulans did in the Picard episode, because the Borg collective or that particular race were defeated in the war with Starfleet and the United Federation of Planets, but to basically dismantle them like they did on the derelict cube doesn't make a whole bunch of sense to me either. I think advances in technology available to everyone, and not for conquering purposes, not to steal, a really fine balance and representation of all races of people, no matter what their creed are, no matter what their gender is, but look like how we are is should be one of the purposes of Star Trek or any other sci-fi sci-fi story. With that said, also, I'm very much interested in the whole figuring out the problem with the Borg is when you take technology, the interconnectedness, the squelching of individuality, because you can work as a collaboration and still maintain your individuality and who you are and still get the work done. But you don't have to, it doesn't have to be squashed. You don't have to have no emotions like the Vulcans. You don't have to be so sneaky like the Romulans. And you don't have to completely conquer a different race. You can bring them in and truly utilize all of their gifts and be one united. It is possible to do that. There should be assimilation to an extent is needed if you're going to, like, for the United States, it's kind of needed, but not to the the way of whitewashing it, and giving up your culture and your individual just to be part of this country or this particular collective. Democracy in the United States is a 200-300-year-old experiment. We got to find a better way how this collaboration is going to represent itself in the next century, because if we don't figure it out, we're going to implode just like the Borg was. There's so many lessons that we can actually learn and improve upon by just watching the series Voyager, the First Contact movies. There's just so much we could learn from all of this. And I hope we will actually take heed and just try. You know what I mean? And I'm rounding out the final section of my podcast, Over 40. And this is right, Johnny on the spot. I talk about everything NASA and nerd news and sci-fi, type of sci-fi with Star Trek. And why wouldn't I highlight this month's African-American writer, Miss Octavia Butler? She was actually given a very prominent place in this week's New York Times book review. And I'll just basically read you the prose of what she has meant. She passed away in 2006. Posthumously, she had several books that were published after her death. 2014-2016 saw a publication surge of stories that had been once rejected. She weathered these rejections and dead-end jobs and her own persistent doubts to committing her life to turning speculative fiction into a home for Black expression. What exactly is speculative fiction? It's basically where you, the author utilizes time travel and other premises to create fantastical stories. But she's not a nihilist. She's not a post-apocalyptic, depressing storyline. She is not completely committed to that, but her worlds are very survivalist, can be very stark and very sad, but they actually have a ring of truth to them from what I understand. She renders these worlds in prose trimmed of sentiment and ornament, overflow with desperation and tragedy. She distrusts utopia, saviors, power brokers, and escapism. Accordingly, her works can be heavy and bleak, full of warnings and catastrophic failures to heed them. She was, as I said, not a pessimist or a didact. Her reoccurring character archetype is a survivor, a figure of endurance, resourcefulness, and compromise. Kind of like her. It's like she, in her personal struggles, she used as she recreated her characters. To read her works and follow her wearied protagonist through Badlands is to experience the treachery of change, its capacity to snatch away gains, and proffer flashes of relief. There are a few refuges in her 14 books, but there are always insights, always futures. I have not added all of her 14 books and compilations to Chatterbooks, but if you were to navigate to Tenfro is reading my online bookstore, aptly named Chatterbooks, you'll see she is highlighted with only 8 books at this time of her best works. And I'm hopeful, because some of her works are out of print, I'm hoping to add all of them as I can actually find them to be able to list them on the site. I'm also learning about that. It's a really easy way. If you're signed in and you do the search as an affiliate, I can directly add books and recreate and change around all of my book lists on Chatterbook. So before you navigate to other book retailers, including Amazon, check out Chatterbooks to get these as well as other books that I've talked about in the series. And that's how I'm going to end this episode of Over 40 and Unapologetically Nerdy. I've actually had a really good time looking up the specific Star Trek riffs. This particular one is the main title of Voyager that I had the pleasure to find, purchase, and download, particularly for the use for the podcast itself. I'm just excited that I was able to bring this content to the listening audience. I hope you will take the time to answer the questions in the full podcast notes. Star Trek trivia, I think that's going to be kind of cool for the really absolute nerdy of us that love everything Star Trek. Navigates to Chatterbooks to get great deals on great books that I've actually mentioned in this episode. There's more fan fiction that I've added over the last couple of weeks, as well as pick up the swag at your convenience. And also, if you still have or still have had the lack of opportunity to go to shipabagofdicks.com and use my promo code 10forgotjokes, you can actually get a large percentage off of your order. And it's just basically hysterical. Sometimes there still are people that really do need a bag of gummy penises. I hope you enjoyed this episode as much as I've enjoyed creating it. I look forward to getting your comments that I may actually read on air if they're not too trolly. And you guys have a great rest of your afternoon. Bye now.